Yeah, my name is Matt Dombrowski. Hey, everyone. I'm a technical product manager at Amazon, and I do my coffee these days as a pour-over, Hario V60. Sometimes in the summer over ice, but usually a straight hot pour-over.
What's up, everybody? We are back for another MLOps Community Podcast. I am Dimitrios, your host, and today I'm joined by none other than Mr. Mikhail Eric, who, oddly enough, just came out with a Rick and Morty GTP chat something. Explain yourself, man. What is this that you just created?
Well, I didn't realize I was going to have the mic to be able to pitch here. But yeah, I mean, basically worked on a little project. Big fan of Rick and Morty. Big fan of what's going on with generative AI. Thought I wanted to see if I could empower people, or, you know, the person that I worked on this with, if we could empower people to make their own Rick and Morty episodes. So we use the latest and greatest in GPT technology, plus Stable Diffusion, plus DALL-E, all that good stuff. And you can have Rick and Morty go on all kinds of crazy adventures.
So if you are playing buzzword bingo, that was just about every word you could have expected
in the cloud. With a little bit of crypto thrown in because we're making it, we're dropping a token.
Web3 decentralized and bingo. There we go.
Democratizing everything.
You are democratizing Rick and Morty. And what exactly is it? I didn't really see it enough. I just saw your tweets about it. And I guess it's that you use GTP to write the script and then you use Stable Diffusion to create the episode.
Yeah.
Like the visuals. That's right.
So it's basically a storyboard. You get the dialogue and the plot points and then accompanying visuals as like the episodes of the story that you've in some sense created.
Dude, how have you not gotten sued?
You know, that very well might happen. I just feel... Okay, so here's the funny thing is we were trying to get... We were like, when we were doing the Twitter announcement, we were trying to at the Rick and Morty official account because we were trying to get a little bit of publicity from them. However, we never heard back from them, so we kind of imagine that the first time we're going to hear from Rick and Morty at all is going to be when their lawyers send us like a cease and desist.
Yeah.
So, hey, anything, any publicity is good publicity, right? Isn't that the name of the game?
Yeah.
Just talk to SBF, right?
Dude, seriously, you're just going, well, no, I won't even say that. You're not, because I hold you in high esteem. And I will not put you on the same playing field as Mr. SBF. But I will say that the director of Rick and Morty, or the creator of Rick and Morty, is super cool. So I would think that he might be down with it. I don't know. Next, do Community and just do all of the work that he's ever done. The same creator of Community, the show, not Community like in general, is the same guy. Dan something, I think.
Dan
is his name. That's it, Dan Harmon. So he's an incredible storyteller, and I'm glad that you got GTP to follow his lead. Anyway, we're on here with Matt. The dude is incredible. He's your fellow coworker, and he also he's been doing some super cool stuff around project management, product management. He talked to us today specifically about the different ways you can be in machine learning, but not have to be the one that's actually writing the code. And I find this fascinating these days too, because of ChatGPT that came out and so many people are crying that the sky is falling and all of the coding jobs are going to be obsolete because this ChatGPT can do everything. But I look at it very much like I look at Photoshop. You aren't going to have this completely replace people's jobs, but you're going to have it augment people's jobs. And what Matt talked to us today about was very much along the lines of, hey, if you're not a coder, but you still have the machine learning acumen, what can you do? Where are places that you can fit into this sphere? What were some takeaways that you had?
Yeah. I mean, Matt's awesome. You know, as you suggested and alluded to, he and I go back. We go back to Alexa days and
way back.
He was the guy, right? That when we were trying to get anything running on Alexa systems, we would talk to him, basically him and his team. So Matt respect, big fan of Matt. A super smart guy. I actually didn't know that his career progression really went from you know, early stage startups through big company, solutions architect through PM, technical PM, technical program manager roles. So he's really spanned. So he's really seen, I think, ML and data roles in a lot of different contexts. And I think we got to see the different insights that provides. I mean, in a sense, they're so very different, right? There's a lot of ambiguity, which he talks about, and different opportunities for these different roles. At the same time, it was interesting to also hear some of the commonalities, right? How being a solutions architect across different roles, you know, in some sense, there's a lot of very similar responsibilities. And then once you're a product manager and a program manager, how there's a lot of the same soft skills around alignment that need to exist. So I thought it was really cool to see that in a sense, there's a lot of diversity in the types of responsibilities you can have. But at the same time, there's commonalities, right? Mm-hmm. And finding ways to navigate that is, I think, what leads to a successful career in machine learning.
That's so good. I loved when he talked about how to get stakeholder alignment. And you know from working at Amazon, and I'm sure people find out real quick when they start to work in big companies, that there's so many processes in place and you have to get sign off from so many different people. You want to figure out what's the best and fastest way that I can do that so I can actually show that I'm producing something of value. And he gave us a few nice little hacks. So check those out and let's get into this conversation. All right, dude, it seems like we've got something in common. You are a pizza and coffee nerd. I also consider myself a pizza and coffee nerd. Give me the breakdown.
Yeah, so I hail from Connecticut, which is not notable for maybe many things, but one thing it is notable for, I think, is pizza. I'm from New Haven, or suburbs of New Haven. And yeah, I mean, my position on that is New Haven is the undisputed pizza capital of the world.
Wait, do you make your own?
I do, yeah. Yep.
And what are you make it New Haven style?
I do, yeah. That's kind of my specialty is New Haven style. I have one of those Uni portable pizza ovens.
I was going to ask if you got an oven.
I feel like half the country bought those during COVID.
Yes.
Hobby or bread making or sourdough or something. So. Uh-huh. Yeah, I fell victim to that trap too. So that and coffee became like my COVID like rabbit hole obsession.
You originally mentioned to me that you had all kinds of ideas around the greater field of machine learning and how sometimes we can get stuck thinking that you need to be either a data scientist or an ML engineer. But there are so many other places that you can play in the cycle of putting out machine learning products. So why don't we start there? Can you give us how you're seeing that?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think it's true. Like a lot of people get wrapped up into, you know, like what algorithms do I need to study, data pipelines, you know, like data infrastructure, and, you know, like fast forward and think about the technology. And, you know, as a product manager, maybe I'm biased, but I think, you know, the totality of what goes into building an ML product, there's actually a lot that goes into, you know, building and launching actually a successful product, not just a technology product. And, you know, when you think about not just the engineering or the science, there's also, you know, a bunch of go-to-market type activities, customer-facing activities. There's like internal project management type stuff. And I think like when you take that all together, I think we talk about machine learning and like the data category. And usually, you know, we're talking to ML engineers or scientists or software engineers and really kind of like pigeonhole kind of those roles to be what they are. But there's a lot of other, I think there's a lot of other opportunity out there besides just those roles, and especially like big companies too. Other kind of like roles or like non-traditional parts of the ML ecosystem or like career paths in the ecosystem. Where can people add value if, you know, maybe they don't want to write Python for the rest of their life?
Yeah, there's one thing that I think it's great that we're already touching on maybe these non-traditional career paths in ML, which is something I think we've mentioned discussing. I'd be curious to hear maybe start off just to hear about your progression through the ML sphere from different roles, because, you know, when we worked together, I remember you as these like this like deep technical person working on implementation, building out core infrastructure, and now you've kind of transitioned to PM. But love to hear, you know, I'm sure that the listeners would also love to hear just what has that non-traditional career path looked like for you.
Yeah, and yeah, spoiler alert, this is a reunion of the two AWS folks here. I'm the only one that's not got AWS in my blood on this call.
We're going to start making some inside jokes, and you just have to phase out for that.
Me and the listeners will go grab some coffee or whatever we do. Anyways, Matt.
Yeah, so I guess I started as a computer science major in college, and after college, I think didn't love what I did in school, you know, back in, what was this, 04, 2004, we did, you know, when you did computer science in college, it was like enterprise Java. And I found it like very soul sucking and hated like object oriented design. And like, just did felt like I didn't want to do that for a living for the rest of my life. And went into the Air Force actually, because I wanted to be a pilot. And my eye like had some eye issues, didn't work out. Ended up still going to the Air Force for a while, launching rockets, not super related. But after I got out, I had a lot of in the Air Force security experience. I did some network security, like pen testing type stuff as a consultant. And then moved to a startup that my friend had started. It was called Localytics back in the day. And they did basically mobile analytics. And I started there as a solutions consultant, actually. So this is kind of like an onboarding role, like working with customers to help them get started with the product and become successful. And that's kind of like, we can do some kind of like ding or sound, but that's one role we can talk about too. It's like consulting or like implementation consulting, onboarding, I think is like definite need for if you're building kind of like ML products or kind of any products, SaaS products, there's probably someone that is there to help like kind of provide white glove service to help customers become successful. And that's what I did there. Moved into like solutions architect role, more helping customers if they have more hairy like implementation issues or like custom implementation issues, and did some kind of like post-sale consulting and implementation work. So any like custom professional services they would kind of need, so we would help build those integrations with customers. And did a lot of work naturally with AWS in that role. Being a startup, they were pretty much all in on AWS, and moved to of course Amazon in AWS as a similarly solutions architect. And that in that role, some solutions architect is like a term that means a lot of different things at a lot of different companies, but at Amazon and AWS at least, it's kind of similar to like other companies have a role called a sales engineer, where you're working with, you're probably paired with a salesperson or like team of salespeople, and you're providing like technical guidance to customers, usually again like in consultation with the salesperson. So a lot of roles have kind of like pre-sales consultant or like sales engineer, if you will, that kind of depends on the product and how they go to market, but like a pre-sales consultant that helps answer technical questions and like overcome technical hurdles in the sales process to more or less get big deals done. And then after a sale is done, maybe the customer moves into like post-sale consulting, and they'll work with the onboarding or like solutions consultant type person to help get them like implemented and onboarded. But AWS, it's a little bit different because, yeah, in AWS, we don't necessarily have like deals, or it's not like a SaaS product where you sign up or product where you buy like a big package of software. It's billing. So solutions architects are kind of like paired with a customer, and maybe it's one-on-one, depends on the size of the customer. But like some customers have a big team of solutions architects working with all their different orgs or like different verticals or like in different specialty areas. And then other like smaller customers might have one solution architect that covers like many customers and like the smaller startup segment. But yeah, and then like enterprise customers might be paired like one-on-one with like an account manager or salesperson to cover kind of like a patch of customers that they work with. But yeah, and then I guess from solutions architect moved into product manager role, moved from AWS to the Alexa team at Amazon. This is, yeah, in Boston. And there was doing a similar role, like solutions architect, more for like internal customers. So our internal customers in Alexa, and Hale was one of them, were building like models with AWS and Alexa and like for Alexa use cases.
So up until this point, you hadn't dealt with machine learning. It was when you went on to the Alexa team that you started doing machine learning products. Yeah,
like leveled ML stuff. So we were doing some more. It was called machine learning, I guess. We called it like predictive analytics, or looking analytics. And
that was the code word.
Yeah, at the startup I was working at, we did some of that. It was like we could tell maybe like when a customer was going to the churn from a mobile app they're using, or when a customer would like click on a specific push notification. We did these kind of, we called them at the time predictive analytics. So started doing some of that before machine learning was like really a thing people talked about. And then at AWS, I did do a lot of like machine learning implementations and projects with like financial services customers, or like insurance customers, or like biotechs that were doing, you know, like machine learning work and using AWS compute services. This is also before higher level services like SageMaker and other things came out. Figuring out how to use AWS storage compute services to their fullest potential for like machine learning workloads, basically. So yeah, I did a lot of that in AWS, like an ML specialist there, and then moved into Alexa still as like a machine learning specialist solutions architect. So it can get like pretty specialized in big companies, I would say. There's a lot of like X role for machine learning, I would say, too, at some of these companies. Yeah, moved into Alexa as like machine learning specialist solutions architect, which is a lot of words. But yeah, basically like helping internal Alexa customers. So there's the ASR, like automated speech recognition team, or like our natural language understanding team, like all these different speech and language modeling teams that would have problems using, you know, like breaking AWS in different ways and like figuring out how to use infrastructure in the best way for their like machine learning workloads. So kind of helped internal Alexa teams with that. And then moved into the product role because, you know, felt like as a solutions architect was great. Enjoyed it quite a bit. Had a lot of strong product opinions. I wanted to be more kind of upstream, have more ownership over like the engineering and product development process. And yeah, I guess have more input into what we were actually building and prioritizing versus like feeling like I was implementing something someone else built, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'd love to zero in a little bit more on transitioning from deep technical implementer to like kind of a PM role. And one of the things I'd also love to touch on and get your thoughts on here is, you know, PMs have been around for a while. I mean, PMs have been in software orgs for as old as probably software has been around. And I do wonder, how is an ML PM, right, or an AI PM different? And what different skill set does that require? What different responsibilities does that require? If there are folks that are listening that are interested in getting into more ML style PMing, or maybe transitioning from regular PM roles into MLPMs, what should they be thinking about and preparing?
Yeah, that is a phenomenal question that I was unprepared for. But yeah, so I would say there's definitely a spectrum of PM roles, you know, and there's different archetypes, I would say. You know, everyone thinks about the classic, like Steve Jobs type visionary PM, I guess, where, you know, we have these think big ideas and throw it over the wall for someone to get it done. But I would say on like the total other side of the spectrum, there's like a lot of technical product manager roles, and a lot of the ML type or ML adjacent PM roles are kind of like, I call them like platform PM roles, where you're working on oftentimes at like big companies, but increasingly smaller and smaller companies are doing a lot of the infrastructure work and realizing like data is actually a product, even internally. So I find it like increasingly there's a lot of platform PM type roles where even a smaller company, you're owning kind of like internal, whether it's like data products, maybe your company does a lot of data work and it's like financial services or something else. And you have a lot of like specialized high quality or like high value data that you're vending to other internal teams or externally. And there's like PMs that make sure, you know, the data they're producing provides value to your customers and what is like the roadmap for the data products that you provide. Or there's traditional, I guess, platform PMs who kind of own like the feature set and roadmap for internal platforms. And you've seen plenty of those, like the Michelangelo's at Uber, whatever else there is. So you're owning basically like internally, what are like the infrastructure capabilities of that platform, and your customer is usually like internal and maybe eventually external customers. So you provide like capabilities to other internal teams to help other internal teams move faster, basically. So I guess like core competencies there for a PM is you probably have to be much more technically inclined than other types of PM role. Probably domain expertise too, I would say. A lot of these roles would be difficult to come into without some ML, cloud, data domain expertise, I guess. I'll say internal stakeholder alignment, communication. Usually companies expect the PMs to be the best communicator in the room. So I would say there's a lot of that unsexy kind of internal like communication, selling your ideas internally, pitching for resources, that kind of thing too as well.
That's an interesting one, how you should be the best communicator in the room. So you have to be able to explain things that are a little bit more technical in, not to say dumbed down, but in a way that everyone hopefully can understand quickly and easily. So one thing that you said there that I want to dive into a little bit more is you mentioned how data is a product and potentially you have PMs for data products. And do you just mean like the way that you're giving other teams the data? Is that what I understood? Or is it like the data itself? And is this, because this is something that I know gets talked about a lot in the data mesh paradigm. And I feel like I've wrapped my head around it, but I just want to make sure that when you say that, are you saying it in that sense or are you saying it in a different sense?
Yeah, I would say all of the above, I guess, especially like some of these large companies, you know, like the Amazon or FANG, I guess, companies have tons and tons of data needs, you know, pipeline hell everywhere. And there's more data than anyone knows what to do with. And just like the ability to make sense of that data and like vend that data out to internal and external customers is a product role in itself. Like, what data are we going to prioritize vending? How do we vend that data? How does the customer need to receive that data in terms of like frequency, velocity, like call patterns? And so I would say, yeah, like the vending of data itself is one thing, but also like offering data products directly is also a thing that happens. Like a lot of companies now have like data that they collect internally and massage or enrich somehow, and then turn around and sell that data as a subscription or as kind of a data product service, but also enrich data and provide data to internal customers as well as like the entire purpose of that team. So yeah, there's PMs in that space too.
My name's Adam Strucker and I'm head of machine learning engineering at Origami Energy here in the UK. And I'm bothering you today to recommend you subscribe to the MLOps Community podcast to keep up to date with a lot of the brilliant goings on within the community and get a glimpse at what some of the greatest minds across the MLOps space are up to.
One of the things I also wanted to go back to is, because when you're describing your career trajectory, you described going from a more like smaller kind of startup style, but you mentioned working at a, you know, a friend startup, I believe it was, or just like a smaller organization, and then obviously moving into something like an Amazon or an Alexa, which is a ton of people, right? And yet having similar roles, maybe being both a solutions architect in a smaller organization and also still a solutions architect in an Amazon style organization. Can you tell us a little bit about like how that's different, and you know what the pros and cons of being in one or the other, and just what that's like?
Oh, that's a good point. I definitely feel like everyone should do a startup once, like in their 20s, maybe. And I feel like that's a great opportunity to kind of like, you get probably like a lot of responsibility, maybe even more so than you should, given maybe your age or experience or whatever it might be, like credentials. And especially like fast growing startups, a lot of opportunity to advance quickly. And clearly there's less like rigor or like career ladders, usually no career ladders whatsoever. So there's a lot of ambiguity, and like with ambiguity, I think comes a lot of opportunity. So lot of the opportunity for advancement very quickly, you know, if you do well. But, and it kind of depends on your style and like preferences. A lot of people also don't love ambiguity and would love to see, you know, here's my career ladder and here's my path. And every 3 years, if I do well, I'll get promoted and get that like 3% less than inflation pay bump every year. And if that's what you're into, that's fine. I think that's great for, you know, people like me that have a family to support and like love and would want stability. So I think it depends on, you know, just the phase of life you're at and like what you need in the moment and, you know, what you're looking for long term as well. But I would say like working environment wise, it can be similar. Like almost every company says, or at least wants to move fast, move quickly and be startup like. So I think like culture wise definitely depends quite a bit. At big companies, like who's the team and like leadership and like what is the org. You can have, as you know, Mihail and Amazon, like a vastly different experience in one team at Amazon versus another. So I think it's tough to generalize too in some ways.
One thing that you said that I thought was a really cool point was just with ambiguity comes opportunity. I think that's a really nice way to put that. I feel that that's something that's especially true and broadly true in general, but especially in machine learning, right? In such a fast moving space that we're in, where things are constantly changing from models, from technology, from team organization, just all these aspects. I'd love if you could like tell us a little bit more about what does that mean, especially as we talk about like non-traditional career paths, right? This idea of a constantly evolving landscape that is machine learning. I mean, what does that mean for someone who's maybe entering the space and, you know, maybe doesn't necessarily want to be just a pure implementation person, or is, I don't even know if a PM is the right role for me. Like, how does that, what can they think or expect given this ambiguity, not just the kind of the ambiguity of the field in general, maybe?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I would say things are changing. Well, things have always been changing rapidly, but especially, you know, today in 2022, I think ML isn't just like a free lunch anymore. You can't just like ML wash a project and get it funded immediately anymore. So I think like leader and companies are becoming a lot more discerning about like the projects they invest in and where they want to make targeted high ROI investments. Whereas before it was like, you know, we're just gonna hire and front projects just because we want to get good talent in the door. And then I think the story has changed a lot in the past few months. But I think from a career perspective, you know, things are, it's not the best timing in the world right now. I would say, I don't think the fundamentals have changed a ton though. You know, keep learning, if you're probably like listening to this podcast in your own free time, you're probably the type of person that's like on the right track to, you know, be in a constantly like learning, evolving state. But I would say definitely keep abreast of like major changes. I would also say don't get like too caught up in a lot of the distractions. Like I like to take a stance, maybe this isn't a great way to do it, but wait for things to mature a little bit before like investing a ton of time or effort into them.
That's wise.
I used to get caught up in this a lot, like being technical and like being young, and you don't want to dive deep into the latest sexy stuff, but give it at least a few months or like years to bake before investing a lot of your time into it, because, you know, technologies do fizzle out or not get adoption. And there's a lot of stuff out there that is like super interesting and compelling. And I think you should do like a lot of that bleeding edge, like reading and keep up to date. But when you make like big investments of your time to learn a new technology, that's where I think like it's important to kind of vet it a little bit first and make sure it makes sense for what your goals are, I guess.
And so when you look at your day, and maybe we can go over this as a product manager, and then also we can look back and when you were a solutions architect and all of these other roles that touch machine learning but aren't necessarily a machine learning engineer or software engineer, a data scientist, that type thing. But as you go through your day, what are the main things that you're doing? What are the different types of activities you're going through? Is it gathering specs take up, you know, 50% of your work week, and then pitching new ideas takes up 10%, and actually having to write down, what are they called, PRDs? Those take up basically 110% of your day. What does that actually look like, and what are some things that you do?
Yeah, I would say a good product requirements documents, I guess, is what you're referring to, PRDs. At Amazon, you've probably also, or maybe you haven't heard of, like, the press release FAQ process, yeah, where we kind of work backwards from the customer and write kind of like press release or like launch announcement for products that we want to launch, and like work backwards to deliver what that is. And actually, right after this, I'm basically like reviewing one of those with our leadership team. And that's kind of like at Amazon, at least, how we make pitches for like investing in new ideas is you write like this document, it's like press release and all these frequently asked questions about why it's a good business, why we should be investing in it. And I think like prepping for that is not just obviously writing a document, but also stakeholder alignment is something that I think I spend a lot of time on, is like communicating with partner teams, communicating with other teams that might have like even competing priorities or dependencies, or again, it's like, depending on your interest, maybe sexy or unsexy part of the job, but like, how do you align all of the stakeholders to kind of like meet the objectives for, you know, your business, but also your customers as well. So spend a lot of time on that. One thing I find it's like, you kind of have to be intentional about too, is just talking to customers, which sounds weird or obvious, but sometimes it's difficult that, you know, as a PM or even any role, it's easy to get caught up in like internal discussions or like technology discussions, or yeah, just like internal debates or fighting fires or whatever, and like Slack and email. But I find it's like, really have to be intentional about talking to customers and like getting out there and talking to your users, whether that's for me in the creator or at Amazon, I work with social media influencers. So for me, it means right now reaching out to influencers and with, you know, mock-ups that I have or ideas, and that kind of vetting and validating those, or kind of understanding what their workflows are, what their pain points are. And sometimes companies have like gatekeepers, and they're for good reasons. Like maybe to talk to a customer, you have to go through the account manager, you have to go through a user research person, and like sometimes it's difficult to get access to customers. And I think it's important though to make it very intentional and a part of your schedule almost. If I'm not talking to customers at least every week, I'm probably not doing what I should be doing. But focusing too internally, or like navel gazing as a product manager, I find that's easy to do, and you have to be like really intentional to avoid that.
So it comes full circle.
I didn't want to talk about it a ton. I don't like know like a huge amount, but like developer evangelist, developer advocate is another role that I think is a super huge interesting role. One. It's like almost the holy grail for developers. Like you get to write code sometimes when you feel like it, but maybe you don't have a specific deadline. Well, of course you probably have like content you need to put out, or like conferences you're presenting at. But I guess like if you're young and want to travel a lot, do conference circuit or own and manage a community, there's like community management aspects, and contribute to open source, you know, do a lot of this public, like working out in the public. I think there is kind of like a social media influencer for ML type role out there, I guess.
Exactly. And the thing about it, the machine learning space, and probably not so much the machine learning, like deep model building space, but ML ops and like machine learning engineering space, I know so many companies that are dying for a good developer advocate, right? Like DevRel is very hard to come by in this sphere, because I think a lot of people have the misconception that if you turn into a developer advocate or you start doing DevRel in some way, you're going to start getting further and further away from the tech. And I try and tell people it couldn't be any further from the truth. Because when you start doing that and you get to just play around with whatever floats your boat. And so if you are interested in a certain piece of tech, you can go build something with that. And a lot of the companies don't necessarily even want to see you always putting out content with their tool, because then it's just monotonous and boring. Like, as long as you're putting out content that is educational or entertaining or valuable in some way, these companies are going to be happy with you doing that. So for all those out there that are wondering if they should go into DevRel, I highly encourage it right now, especially in the ML ops or ML engineering sphere. I know there's not enough of them out there. And I think that really moves the space forward too. The more people that you see talking about it, the more people that you see influencing on that realm, it helps others understand, and it's just getting more education out there. So totally feel you on that. I wanted to jump back though. One thing that you talked about was stakeholder alignment, and stakeholder alignment feels very much like playing the Game of Thrones in a way. And so what have you learned while doing that, and how do you do it? What are some tricks that you have up your sleeve?
Yeah, stakeholder alignment can be a dirty phrase. I think actually to go into another role, you might have heard of like technical program manager, like program manager type roles. Like they're also kind of like a PM adjacent role, I would say.
I actually have no idea what that does. What does that mean?
Yeah, Amazon. I think like Meta, Google, others have a similar role. It's technical program managers. Basically, a lot of tech, like big tech organizations, have big, hairy, like technical problems or migrations or like massive technical efforts that are like wide and far reaching through the business. So they're probably massive, like cross functional efforts. I don't know. Amazon had one a couple of years ago that was like, we need to move off of Oracle everywhere. And it was like, deeply ingrained in almost every like service at Amazon, or like big GDPR is like another great canonical example of who is the GDPR person at your company that's like bringing the whole company forward towards this objective. And there are like lots of those types of projects, programs, and there's like specific role a lot of companies that's like program manager, and there's technical program managers, because for a lot of these projects, you have to be pretty technical as well. And their entire job is basically that, like stakeholder alignment, communicating status updates, resolving dependencies, resolving like escalating issues before they arise. And like generally, I don't know if I can swear, but like getting stuff done. And I think that is, and also there's like kind of a like little life hack or career hack here that like I've seen a lot of paths from that role into software engineering type roles. I've seen that a lot at Amazon, like other companies. It's like, I think a really great program manager is a force multiplier and makes a massive difference in a project, like succeeding or failing. And I think people notice that very quickly, like within a couple of weeks of having a good program manager. I think it's very clear if they're good or not good. And I've seen a lot of people that there's almost like kind of a path from technical program manager to software development manager, for better or for worse, I guess, at Amazon. So it's kind of like a feeder into a lot of other roles in a way as well, or like stepping stone, I guess. So I've seen that happen quite a bit as well. So it's a good way to like sidestep into an engineering manager role, but maybe not as a direct software engineer, if that makes sense. But actually, to answer the question you asked, like, tips for stakeholder alignment, I would say one people don't talk about enough is just like earning trust. Like, you're not going to force alignment. And, you know, I think you have to communicate both like good news and bad news in a like authentic way that earns a lot of trust, and build relationships and partnerships. That doesn't mean just like having meetings and talking about dates and working backwards from those dates to get a meeting, like an objective accomplished, but, you know, just talking to people as people and building relationships and just generally earning trust in ways outside of the normal, I guess. So whether that's just like pulling people aside or developing like one-on-one relationships, or like making an effort to travel and be there in person, or just getting in front of people, I think is important. Just like building a human connection and not being a robot. And I would say also, I guess, use the tools you have at your disposal. A lot of people try to reinvent the wheel or get fancy, but I think the great way to get alignment is just like over communicate. So just something dumb like sending a weekly status email sometimes is like something you push off or don't want to do. But like you probably, your company or organization probably has a ton of tools to get the job done, whether it's, I don't know, wikis or tickets or email or whatever it is. Like you don't have to get fancy. It's really just about communicating and even like bordering on over communicating. I think while people might not respond directly, just like seeing status and letting people know that you've thought things through, I think is like a big way to give people comfort that you know what the hell you're doing, I guess.
I have a little bit of a different question. So Demetrius can fact check me here, but it's you might be one of the first guests, if not the first guest, who, I mean, because you had time in the Air Force. So military personnel, I don't think regularly are guest hosts on the MLOps podcast. I mean, that's cool. And I'd love to, you know, how has that, if at all, influenced kind of some of the things you've done in ML in the course of your career? I mean, any skills? Is there, I guess, when we think about non-traditional career paths, is there a path forward where the first step is to spend some time in kind of a military division and then go to ML? Is that something that we should be recommending to people? Or is this, you know, did you feel like it was a boost or totally orthogonal and not necessarily relevant, or how did that play out?
I'd say totally orthogonal, not super relevant, but there's a lot of soft skills and like leadership management skills, I guess, you get as, you know, like a young officer in the military that like similar to some tech roles are like in a startup, which is weird comparing government to a startup, but like similar to that, graduating college and like having much more responsibility than you probably should or would normally be afforded, I think makes just kind of like puts your feet to the fire, I guess, and makes you figure things out quickly just so you don't like embarrass yourself, I guess. Like public humiliation is a good motivator. So like a lot of times as a young lieutenant in the military, you're like responsible for overseeing people that are like twice your age. And I think that is a good, yeah, again, good motivator to like really just push yourself, but be better. And yeah, there's a lot of ML work happening in the intelligence community and military. I think as a trend, you know, like Air Force and other services are starting to like work much more closely with contractors and even do a lot more internal cyber and hire a lot of developers. I would say it's a good way to get like a free college education, a good way to get like free skills. And if you're interested in obviously like cybersecurity type stuff, or even, I don't know if there's an ML specialty yet, but it is a good way to get like free technical training, free education, and a lot of other benefits, I would say, in like a compressed amount of time, like 4-year commitment or whatever your commitment is, and then like leverage that into other opportunities, I guess, especially in the kind of constrained job market where other opportunities might not be obvious, I guess.
Yeah, you get to travel a little bit. I know that right next to my house in Germany, there is a big U.S., I don't know if it's Army base, it's or Air Force. It's in Wiesbaden. You may know if you ever went through there. Might be a U.N. base. I have no clue because I'm not too in the know in that type of thing, but it is interesting to see. There's a ton of people that are all around Wiesbaden that are Americans. And I found out something pretty wild that nobody tells you. You've been floating around the MLOps sphere for a while now in different roles, not necessarily doing the exact MLOps or engineering role, but you see other ways that you can get into the space. You've seen others that are in the space. For you, what are ways that you feel like are good ways in? But what else do you think, like, how would you recommend people get into MLOps right now?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. I would say kind of like leverage what you have today and like just have a good introspective understanding of what your strengths and superpowers are. I think a lot of people focus on what their weaknesses are. Like you know, have a gap here, so I'm going to go waste a bunch of time doing a certification to fill that gap. But like, I would say most companies tend to reward specialization and going deep in a subject area. So it's hard to generalize advice, but you know, what are you good at? What do you love doing? And like double, triple down on that. And whether that's taking like technical skills and like applying them to ML or ML ops or data, whatever it is. I would say I always think I've been rewarded by specializing. So I would say that helps a lot. In terms of specifics too, I think it's like cliche to say, maybe like, but networking I think helps. I don't think there's a job I've gotten that I didn't know someone at or wasn't from my network. So build those connections where you're at, use those for your next thing. And also just like get involved where you're at too. Like a lot of people focus on their job opportunities and what's in their job description, but I'd say like most of the skills I've gained are from, you know, like experimenting or playing around or like side projects that weren't necessarily like part of my immediate job description, but probably like adjacent to what I was doing, or found ways to improve what I was doing with other technologies. So try to see what's out there and see what you can apply to what you're doing in novel, but like relevant and valuable ways, I guess, or just seek out projects that can apply technologies you want to work on. Yeah. So kind of like a mix of working in things where you're already doing them or like seeking out certain projects in the space you want to be in, I guess.
You said something crucial there, which I completely agree with about the networking piece. And some people I know, they're thinking like, yeah, it's easy to just say go network. But then whenever I go and give my business card out at event functions, I don't make any friends. So one thing you can do if you would like to meet others that are in the MLOps space or doing machine learning stuff, we've got meetups that are happening all over the world. And that is a really low barrier to entry way to just go and hang out with people that are doing this stuff. And I love that we've got them in so many different cities. And I think that's a easy way. You go to one of these, it doesn't matter, even if you're alone, and you meet people. You can't help but meet people. So that's such a true statement, like network, and that will help you get your next job.
Great, masterful segue right there.
I had to shamelessly plug that, man. What'd you expect? I couldn't help it. Anyway, here we go. That's all we've got, dude. This was awesome, Matt. I really appreciate you coming on here and talking to us about all of these different ways that you've seen machine learning being done from other angles, I guess, from different perspectives, we could say. So thanks for doing this.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
Appreciate coming on, and also like, I'm interested in all that you guys do for the community. And yeah, good to see you guys out there in the public sphere.
This is Skyler. I lead machine learning at Health Rhythms. If you want to stay on top of everything happening in MLOps, subscribe to this podcast now. 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 Now.
How are you doing?